Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tine.
And I'm Bonnie North. Earlier in the show, commentator Kyle Cherik referenced the rise of the celebrity chef in this country. And while our next guest might not exactly fit that definition, she certainly has attained a level of fame that extends beyond her New York restaurant.
Gabrielle Hamilton has made TV appearances with the likes of Martha Stewart and Mark Bittman, and even won in her appearance on the Food Network's Iron Chef America. But she also came to cooking by way of a creative writing graduate program at Michigan, and her memoir, Blood, Bones, and Butter, is considered one of the best food memoirs ever written.
At first glance, her new cookbook, Prune, which is named for her East Village restaurant, seems to have little narrative at all. But read a little closer, and you'll find much in the recipes that helps you understand Gabrielle Hamilton's approach to her unique cuisine.
Hamilton stopped by the Lake Effect studio on her recent trip to Milwaukee. Welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So your memoir, which is sitting next to me, your real live memoir of your road to now, came out a couple of years ago. But as I read through Prune, it feels like maybe if your restaurant's kitchen itself could write a memoir, this might be it. Is that a reasonably fair way to put it?
Well, the food that we cook at Prune is all completely related to my life. I don't conceive of food. There's nothing invented or conceptual. So it has to be food that I know very personally. So naturally, there's an incredible correspondence between Prune, the cookbook, and the memoir, Blood, Bones, and Butter. It's kind of ended up inadvertently becoming sort of the recipe companion book to the memoir. I didn't plan that, but now that I've been mercantile trained, it's a really good thing to say on the air around Christmas time.
Yes, of course. Well, in a way, it's almost as, the book could plant a flag for you and say, when I was on this earth and I owned this restaurant, this is the way I did things.
It is not aimed to do anything but that. I don't claim to be the authority on cooking. Yes, it's just a direct, very, very truthful explanation of how we do what we do, and frankly, under the worst circumstances. So there's no, no one will have aspirations looking through this book who will wish that they worked in a tenement restaurant basement like we do, or that all of their pots could also be warped and with no matching lids like ours are. So these are maybe not the best ways to cook, but they're the ways that we do cook. In these very untenable circumstances, it's an East Village dive in the bottom of a tenement building. And we do not have an open hearth rotisserie, and we do not have a wall of gleaming copper. Nonetheless, somehow we eke out some beauty and deliciousness out of those, untoward circumstances.
Well, and beauty is a key here. I mean, people might not aspire to the circumstances out of which this food arises, but when they look at some of the pictures and see the butter bubbling over the trout, they might very well aspire. I think it was trout. They may well aspire to create this stuff. This is not a hand-holding set of...
Oh, I think there is a lot of hand-holding, actually. I think the photographs... were taken by Eric Wolfinger, and he worked in the food business. He's a baker and a cook. And the poor guy was under very strict mandate that I didn't allow him any food styling and no propping either. And I barely let the guy have any light. And what he managed to show was the result of that work that we do in the back of the house. And then and the beauty that we do manage to eke out. So the photos are quite beautiful without any of the usual soft focus pornographic trappings whatsoever. And I think if you'll see, the recipes are all written quite straight in a real play-by-play, but the book is loaded, really loaded, chock full with my handwritten notes, which are the advice and information I have of 15 years of making these foods day in and day out repeatedly, as well as wrangling the staff that I have to get them to make these dishes. And in my employ, I have I have a 17-year-old extern who doesn't know the difference between flatleaf parsley and cilantro, as I know from experience sending him down to the walk-in to come back with the wrong product. And I also have a 10-year veteran elegant line cook who I can just speak shorthand to. So in fact, like the people that work for me are exactly like the home cook. So I think the novice home cook is going to be just fine with this book. They're going to have as much instruction as the sort of sophisticated home cook who has her own, I don't know, sous vide machine.
In some ways, though, it seems like it is a throwback to a simpler time with cookbooks. You know, maybe if the handholding exists, it doesn't exist in the form of cute essays and sidebars and tutorials about technique that kick off the book.
Right. And maybe it's not exactly handholding in the sort of warm, cuddly
right.
sense. Much of the notes are, in fact, scolding because it's written to these line cooks. And I do a lot of scolding of the 21-year-old. Not on the first time. I never begrudge anyone what they don't know. But once I've now told them two or three times, then we're not teaching. I'm just scolding, which I think is why you will see at certain places in the books like 3 exclamation points after a certain note or 4, you know, bold underlines. Like, I've already said this 3 times. But most of the notes actually are caring. They are meant to preserve the body of the line cook, my product. They're meant to preserve my money. They're meant to actually keep your mood elevated when you're cooking something. I know when you have a very long project in front of you that could really sink you down into the depths of despair if you had to do it alone. There are a lot of notes in there that say like, hey, get a buddy. This is going to take a long time. Or, hey, don't turn the oven on without checking in there first because you're about to torch somebody's work that's drying in there overnight. And I've seen that heartbreak. And so they are, in fact, maybe the loving notes of a matriarch, like your grandmother might have written in the family heirloom book of recipes that maybe you got at your wedding, except that I'm not that benevolent and my family is not exactly, you know, it's a bunch of motley line cooks.
Where in this mix does Iced Ovaltine fall?
Iced Ovaltine. I can't get through brunch without it. So that is a perfect, perfect drink. It's got all the protein and a little bit of sugar and that malted barley deliciousness. I drink a lot of liquids during the brunch service. It's a very fast-paced, hot, no time to eat. And you don't really want a full stomach in that kind of jail cell you're in, the sort of
sweating,
boiling
and, yeah.
hot jail cell of the egg line. So it does the trick. It's icy cold, quenches your thirst, fills you up, and has just enough sugar to keep your mood elevated while you're poaching 244 eggs, you know, an hour.
And I see line cooks drink it by the quart. Is that right?
We, you know, have a thing. I can tell when somebody's flagging and their mood's getting kind of bad and their food's coming out slowly and they have a clipped tone when they're calling back the order. And I sort of take a look around and just say, hey, everybody, it's time for a little Ovaltine snack and ask a waiter to bring us a quart each. So the customer can order it by the glass, but we drink it in plastic quarts, hopefully clean, that don't taste like, you know, yesterday's vinaigrette. But we drink a lot of our beverages out of, you know, quart containers.
So you have this creative writing background, and obviously you have this years of cooking, 15 of them owning a restaurant background. Did those two parts of your psyche work well together in compiling the cookbook, or are they at odds?
Well, I really did bring a bunch of writerly education or skill set to the cookbook, which I was grateful to discover that there is an opportunity for writing in a cookbook. I had foolishly thought that I was going to circumvent the sophomore effort by just cranking out a cookbook and we could just dump it into the universe. It would be book number 2 done and then I could move back to something more literary. But as soon as I got into the writing of the cookbook, I realized that I don't really work that way and books really matter to me. And even if it's a cookbook, it could be an airplane repair manual and I would take care of it in the way that it needs to be taken care of, regardless of its idiom. So I did have to bring, in fact, a lot of writing to this book, even though ostensibly there's no writing in it. There is no introduction. There are no lively head notes. But the construct of the book is that it's written completely and only to my line cooks, only in that voice. But like a playwright, I know that the person coming to see the play has to get all the information they possibly can only from the dialogue of the people on stage. The characters can't break out and address the audience and break down the fourth wall and explain everything that's going on. So ultimately, I kept the reader, the domestic reader, the home consumer in mind the whole time. Even though I was writing in this voice to the line cooks, I knew precisely who would really be reading and using this book. And so I got all of the information I possibly needed into the book in this clever writing way.
Well, and it strikes me when people use the word minimalist to describe it, that might be giving short shrift to the meat that's really there.
That's good writing, right? Where what you can say in one well-chosen word instead of four flabby words, I think is where we're headed when we want to be writers.
The last line in the book is a reminder that we, as your hypothetical staff, ought to be enjoying ourselves in making food or we're in the wrong industry. Do you often have to remind yourself of that?
Myself, no. Family meal, that's from the family meal chapter. And it's funny, it was kind of a throwaway because there aren't even any recipes in the family meal chapter. It's just a kind of explanation of how to put a meal together. And that's actually a very difficult part of cooking, I think. Sometimes you can go to a dinner party and it's all, you know, eight versions of chocolate brownie and there is no salad or a soup or, you know, a meal needs to almost have like sentence structure, like
narrative arc.
Narrative arc, exactly. And you can't have it all verbs or all nouns. You need a mix and some adjective here and there, metaphorically speaking. So that chapter means a lot to me also because I eat family meal only and exclusively. I am not running one of those restaurants where I sit at the bar, you know, at 10 o'clock and I know everyone else is going to work until midnight and I have my, you know, special food with my glass of wine. I eat family meal only. So I have begged the cooks to make one that I can really enjoy because if it's really 8 days in a row of pancetta scrap and overcooked pasta, I am going to sink down into a hole of misery. Nobody wants that.
You go to a place like Milwaukee and you meet people who may well never go to New York, let alone eat at Prune. What charges you up about meeting and talking with them?
Well, I'll see when I go to my event tonight how it goes. But having written Blood, Bones, and Butter, that memoir, I must say my conversations with total strangers have improved immensely. And we kind of cut to the chase now and talk about more real things than the weather. Although, being in Milwaukee, I do think we should talk about the weather.
There's sort of no avoiding it right now as we're having this conversation.
It's a phenomenon.
you're talking about the photos. It is kind of liberating to have the pages pre-stained for our convenience.
Yes, the book is designed to look as if I just took the three-ring binder that we actually work out of off the shelf, Xeroxed the pages, and put them in this sort of pretty pink binder that looks like a Moleskine journal. There have been people who thought that that's exactly what we did, that we just Xeroxed the pages. So, I mean, that's the perfect credit to the designer, Cynthia Warren, where it looks as if it just spontaneously happened and the designer recedes. You're not even aware of her touch. You know, when you're stirring your sauce later and it spatters onto the page, you won't mind. The pages have all of our thumbprints on them and the spatter of chocolate that is real, that really is in the binders that we cook out of. So the thing is, I couldn't write the cookbook in the normal way. I haven't really worked in a domestic home kitchen in over 30 years. I couldn't use that language. I started to write the book in the normal kind of home cook format and, I mean, came to a screeching halt in probably 11 minutes flat. I just was lying through my teeth. I haven't reached for a cookie sheet in 30 years. I don't really even know what a cookie sheet is. I use quarter sheet pans. I use half sheet pans. I use a hotel pan. You're going to get all of what those things are. And if not, you're going to just figure out what to use from your own kitchen. I would never turn to a cook and say, preheat the oven to 325 degrees because our ovens are on as soon as we walk in the morning and we turn them off at the end of the night. But I respect you and I trust that you are going to know that eventually you're going to have to get that oven on. If you're going to roast the roast, we're going to have to turn the oven on. I think I had an editor at Random House who she'll pick a recipe out of a book and cook it for a dinner party, having never made it before and furthermore never even read the recipe through to the end. And I chuckle with such delight at that hubris. I just cannot even believe the bravado of that. So I agree to help you in every way that I can. I give you every freaking ounce of education and experience and exposure I have to these dishes. But I do not agree to spare you your own amateurisms or your own results of your own hubris. Like that's yours to enjoy and you'll learn a lot.
I kind of do enjoy the error and trial and error.
I mean, there's no other way to learn quickly.
Well,
permanently.
Yeah, absolutely.
That'll learn you.
I'm looking forward to spattering chocolate on the pages of this book. Gabrielle Hamilton, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Gabrielle Hamilton is the chef and proprietor of Prune, a restaurant in New York's East Village. Her new cookbook is also called Prune, and she was in Milwaukee earlier this month to talk about it. The two of us also talked about pickles for some reason, and you can hear a little of that conversation at wuwm.com/lakeeffect.
And with that, we wrap up the show and wish you a wonderful Thanksgiving. However you spend the rest of your day, we're really thankful you included us.
We'll be back tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 with another edition of Lake Effect. From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee.
It's 11 o'clock, so keep listening because fresh air comes your way next.